So before we get into the scripted part of this intro, I just want to share a little bit of what happens behind the scenes. Sometimes people think that putting together a podcast episode is really easy, but there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. So last week, for the whole week, well, probably for about 2 weeks, I've been feeling quite sick. I had a sore throat, I had a post-nasal drip, and I just was not feeling well. I was booked off from work, but I had a podcast recording booked with Mark Renier. So I said, let's go ahead and record. Thursday afternoon, we sit down and we record an episode. It was epic content, one of the best episodes I've done. We recorded for about an hour and a half. This was going to be a two-part episode. Now, take into account, like I said, my throat was sore. I was feeling sick. We sat down an hour and a half into this epic episode. We suddenly found that for some reason, the recording software that we were using on the internet had not recorded anything. It had just lost the entire recording. We went back and we tried to go through all the folders to see if we could find it. But alas, it was gone. 1.5 hours worth of content gone. So, another meeting set for just after the recording. I did the meeting that I had to do, and kindly Mark obliged, and we did this episode also. So this was an episode we were going to do later in the season, but because of the time we had, we decided to sit down and to record the episode. So this episode was actually episode number 3 that we recorded on a very, very long day of podcast recording. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. Okay. Now the scripted part. As I mentioned, in this episode, I chat with returning guest, Mark Renier. Mark is a well-traveled birder who guides for nature travel birding. As with all of his episodes, once again, he shares some fantastic content. This week, the episode might not focus on birds as much as we usually do, but for anyone looking to travel to Africa, this episode is for you. Mark gives us everything we need to know for traveling to African countries for birding. What to pack, what not to pack, vaccines, preparation, and just everything you'll need to ensure that you are well prepared. Bring new life to your garden with Westermann's Wild Bird Seed, a delicious seed mix attracting a variety of wild birds to your garden. Find it at various pet and lifestyle retailers across South Africa, online and in-store. Westermann's, for the love of birds. So, let's have a chat to Mark and find out what we need to know to travel into Africa. Okay, I'm joined by a regular guest, Mark Renier. He's been on the show quite a few times, getting ready for some really awesome African trips. So, Mark, welcome back to the Birding Life podcast.
Hey, how's it, Adam and listeners? Thanks. It's good to be back. It's always a pleasure chatting to yourself, Adam, and the folks at the Birding Life and all your listeners, and just sharing our passion for the birds and birding and everything around birds.
So 2024, I always get jealous when I look at your Facebook posts and your Instagram posts and see the birds you are photographing, the birds you are seeing. You really get to go to some really amazing places. So tell us about the start to 2024. What has been some of the birding you've got up to, and what is some birding you've got planned?
It's been lucky, Adam. I was on tour in the start of the year, so I spent New Year's Eve up in the Blyde River Canyon, Mpumalanga, on the border of Mpumalanga, Limpopo. So I got my year off to a cracking start with some good birding up in the canyon. And the canyon's quite unique. You know, you've got the water birds, obviously, in the canyon and some of the forest things, half-collared kingfishers, finfoots if you're lucky, mountain wagtails, and you've also got, it's also forest, and arena trogons, Nisna. Tarakos, that sort of stuff. So yeah, I started my year off to a bang there, and then was on tour for almost the most of January with three ladies from the States, and we did the whole of Eastern South Africa, popped into Lesotho. So it was good. So I really got my birding year for South Africa off to a great start, and then I had some local trips, being up to Wakkerstroom, which is always lekker to get the Highveld specials, Rudd's Lark, Secretary Bird, Yellow-breasted Pipit, all those nice goodies up there, and then just some local stuff around Nelspruit up to Hoedspruit. So, no, it's been really good. I mean, I'm sitting on about 520 species for the year for South Africa, which is pretty good since we're only 2 months in. And then I'm on my way tomorrow to Kenya. I'm doing Tavu East and West and Amboseli, so I'm quite excited for that. There's some good birds for me to see there and incredible wildlife. So, yeah, no, it's good. The year's looking good. Couple of trips to Uganda later in the year. I'm sure we'll get a podcast together for Uganda, and some international travel coming later in the year as well, doing Colombia, Guatemala, and Madagascar. So it's going to be good.
And then we've mentioned this on previous episodes, you guide with nature travel birding. Tell us a little bit of nature travel birding and what sets you guys apart. Why should people book trips with nature travel birding?
Yeah, so I'm involved with nature travel birding. We're a bird company. We plan and organize and run birding trips all across the world. What sets us aside is we tend to be much smaller group focused. So our groups, we only run six people in the group. And it just makes it easier from a guiding point of view, just to make sure, you know, we get everyone onto the bird, make sure everyone's having a good time, they're getting what they want out of the trip. Because you can imagine on a group trip, people all want to get different kind of things. So that's really what sets us apart is that, you know, we run expert guided, small group and private guided birding trips. So we also do a lot of private trips, put trips together. People might have a look at one of our itineraries or one of our destinations and say, but, you know, they might want to do a bit of this, or they might also be interested in the culture. Wildlife, of course, you know, in Africa, there's a lot of wildlife to be seen. So that's the big difference between us, is we're more small, try and do exactly what people want to do, and we're happy to customize and change anything to suit anyone's needs, budget, etc. And, yeah, we're small, but still the company's run. It's company owned, so the owners are. We're all involved in running the company. We're all involved from the ground. So that, I think, also makes a big difference.
So in this episode, we're going to be talking about tips in terms of traveling into Africa and traveling in different countries. Now, the specific mindset I've got behind this here is obviously from a South African perspective. I can do a trip up to Kruger or to West Coast National Park or one of those local destinations. We are really talking here about traveling to other countries as opposed to just birding within our local region. They say you've always got to establish the credibility of the person who's speaking. So before we get into this episode, tell us some of the countries. I don't know if you're going to remember all the countries. What are some countries that you've visited in Africa? And maybe also just to really make us super jealous, what are some of the international destinations that you've had the privilege of visiting?
Yeah, no, definitely. I've done a fair amount of travel to try and see birds across the globe, actually. I mean, we do run trips actually all over the world. So internationally, I've been to Costa Rica, I've been to India, Sri Lanka, I was in Argentina last year. Where else have I been? And then, I mean, a good part of Africa. I mean, I know I've been to the whole of Southern Africa, of course. I've been to Botswana, Kenya, Madagascar, and Namibia. I mean, that's around the corner. Uganda, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Tanzania. So, yeah, I would say I've got a fair amount of knowledge and guided in a fair amount of the top birding spots in South Africa, or in Southern Africa and Africa, and always looking at new destinations. So we're going to Angola a little bit later in the year on a recce trip, and then, yeah, I'm doing Colombia and Guatemala a little bit later in the year. Now, I've also done a bit of Southeast Asia, so I've done Vietnam as well. So, yeah, packing a bag. I've always actually got a bag packed, ready to go.
And then in terms of Africa, what would be your favorite birding destination and why?
I'm a real sucker for Uganda. So I've been lucky enough. I've led multiple trips to Uganda. I've spent a lot of time in Uganda. And I just absolutely love the country because of its people, the diversity, the biodiversity, the great birding, the mix of habitats that we cover. We get really, really good mammals on the trip. Great birds. It's just an all-round and a wonderful country. Great birds mixed with chimpanzees and gorillas. And then a little bit closer to home, of course, I'll always be biased towards the Kruger Park. It's where I grow up. It's where I live, where I've grown up. And then our neighboring country of Namibia, where part of our company is based in Windhoek, is also Namibia, such a diverse country from the desert right to the coast. And then up through to the Caprivi. It's just an amazing place to go birding.
Yeah, so the idea behind this episode was to be very, very practical. And one of the reasons that I did this episode, a little bit of a spiteful reason, but it's the reason it is. I'm looking at a trip up into an African country and I was getting ready to pack. And just in terms of the preparation, in terms of going to the country, I realized there were things, as someone who's never been done an international birding trip, there were a lot of questions that I had and which I was looking for answers for. So I thought, I can obviously pick up the phone. Mark's a friend of mine. I can pick up the phone, have a conversation with you, and you'll help me through a lot of the stuff over the phone. But I thought, if I've got these questions, there must be other people that have the same questions that I have. So the idea around this episode is to be very practical, give you tips for planning and packing and just the stuff that I don't think anyone else talks about. I think we just assume that people know about the stuff that we're going to talk about in this episode. So we're going to be very, very practical. We'll talk about birds, obviously, in the midst of our conversation. But a lot of this is just going to be practical stuff that if you're getting ready to do a trip into Africa or into one of the countries in Africa, that you'll hopefully be able to listen to this episode and get some really simple tips and advice in terms of traveling up into Africa. So maybe this is a little bit of a starting point, and you mentioned about Uganda as a fantastic birding country. If I was to sit here and I was to talk about planning a trip into Africa, and I mean, obviously Africa's got many, many different countries, what would be the starting point? You know, obviously as a birder, there's a lot of different species. If I've never been up, let's just take Southern Africa out of it. I've never been beyond Southern Africa and I wanted to do a birding trip. What are possibly some of the first questions that I should be asking as a birder when looking to identify that first country that I should be visiting as I start to, excuse the pun, spread my wings up into the African continent?
No, it's a good question, Adam. I think if you've punted it in a way, if it's your first time leaving Southern Africa, or even for some of you international listeners, same, coming to the continent, why? What makes you choose a specific country? I think first and foremost is safety. You're going to be choosing a country that is safe. So, I mean, a lot of Africa will always be, I don't think any country is 100% safe, but I mean, you'd always choose a country that's safe, easy to get around. I mean, when I say safe, a country like Uganda, a Kenya, Tanzania, Namibia, a South Africa is relatively safe versus like a country with Congo that's got a war going on. So, I mean, that's what I mean by safety. Language might be a thing. You know, you might want to, for your first trip, go to a country where everyone speaks English versus like a good parts of West Africa. People speaking French can make it quite difficult unless you can speak French. Accessibility, how easy is it to get to the country from wherever you're coming from? That can be a deciding factor for some folks. And then tourist infrastructure. You know, Uganda sometimes can even be labeled as tame Africa. It gives one an idea where you're still getting those great African birds, can get into great forest, and it's a little bit easier. There's good infrastructure, there's good road network to get from A to B, great lodges, accommodation, guides. It just makes it so easy versus doing a country that's not so prepared for tourism, where getting around is hard, there's not really bird guides, no accommodation, might be having to camp deep in the forest, where for some that's great. It's got, they'd want to explore like that, but some of our birders, you can imagine, want a bit of luxuries and a bit of, also want to have a holiday, if I can put it that way. Interest, you know, some people might be hardcore birders and listers that are quite happy to travel to countries in Africa that most people don't go to because they're looking for those new birds. Where someone, if you've never been to Africa or you've never been up into Central West Africa, you might say, but okay, by doing this trip, what can I get most bang for my buck? Great birds, what wildlife can I see? Can I see any culture? Photography, you might be into your photography. So, you know, then if you think I'm a photographer, I want to photograph birds plus wildlife, then you start to think, you know, something like your open plains of East Africa. Or you might be a bucket list to see a migration or the wonderful pan of Etosha in Namibia. And it's got great wildlife and the country's got great birding. So I think there's a number of factors that lead to us, even your own personal list. You know, some people, you might just say to myself, a bird I really want to see is a Pell's fishing owl, and I'm not coming right. Then you hear everyone talking about doing a trip up to Botswana, be it visiting the Delta, Maremi, or up to the Panhandle, Shikawi, or you might think, I really want to see a shoebill. Then you know, well, Uganda is going to be the easiest. You might end up traveling to an area on business and have a few days to spare where you can fit in a couple of days of birding, get in touch. So I think there's a lot of options, but to sum it up, it's accessibility, safety, and what tourist infrastructure is available in the country. And then what's on offer? You know, birding companies like ourselves might have deals running where we managed to get good prices and good deals to a certain country at a certain time. And that also might persuade someone to go into a certain area.
One thing you didn't really touch on, what about experience? You know, does the level of experience of the birder? Because, you know, I know when I first started birding, for example, forest birding can be very challenging for a newer birder, where there's other forms of birding that might be a little bit easier. Would you say that experience should come into it, that, you know, in terms of your level of experience, that some countries might be a little bit more difficult to bird in, that maybe you should also look for habitats that are a little bit more accommodating? Because you might just end up going to a country as a newer birder and it's got this fantastic bird list, but the style of birding, the habitats might just be very challenging, where you come back and you might be quite disappointed.
A valid point, definitely. And I think that's a valid point to consider. I mean, as you've summed up there, birding a forest is challenging, and you've never done forest birding and you go to a country that's only forest birding, like in West Africa, you might find it a very hard, challenging country. It might be something you want to do more open savannah bushveld birding and then get into that. So that definitely would also influence different birders. That being said, you know, you also get to a point where you look at your list, even if you're just in South Africa, we start thinking, but where's my biggest gaps? And if you haven't spent time in that forest and worked on that skill, that's going to be a big gap in your list. So, I mean, part of your preparation and looking at these trips is also practicing and going birding in a forest. So, I mean, we, of course, in South Africa don't have forests like they have in Central and West Africa. You can still spend time in our forest in KZN, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and just pick up on that skills and how the forest birds move, looking at that leaf litter on the ground, watching for the movement, the birds. But definitely, I think your first African trip, you might not want to go to West Africa where it's just forest birding. Maybe a combination of like open, easy birding with a bit of forest might be great for you.
And then in terms of safety, how would people go around that in terms of preparing for safety? Was it something, you know, just going onto different news sites? Is there specific, how would you go around if you wanted to go to a country and check out how safe the country is? What would be the process? Because, you know, you spoke about that Africa can be unstable. So a country, for example, could be quite stable today, where 2 weeks from now, something happens in that country. And it's just the reality of Africa. So How would you go around that to ensure that, you know, you're not just going to land up in a country and you reduce the risk of something happening?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Africa is forever changing, especially parts of Central Africa. I think what you need to do, you need to just check the different websites and what government advisories are saying. And obviously, just keep in touch. I mean, keep an eye on what's happening in the country looking to travel. You know, most birding operators are not going to take people in if it's not safe. So they're probably going to be the ones that say to you, no, we don't really run tours there at the moment because this is happening, waiting to see how it progresses and whether it's safe. But I really think you need to just check local news, travel advisories from the different embassies, and then make your own decision. I mean, obviously, sometimes it's a little bit of an overreaction. So, I mean, you see travel advisories not to go to Mozambique because there's been a bit of unrest in the far north, but you might be going to the far south and you might be 1,000 kilometers away. Then to me, it's not a big worry. So I think you just need to keep up to date with two websites, online news, and the travel advisories from the embassies just on what's happening. But I mean, do understand that Africa, she's beautiful, but there's always something on the boil somewhere and one just has to decide. Be smart about it. You know, if everyone is telling you not to go, probably not a good idea to go. But if you're getting local guys on the ground that are saying, you know, where we are, it's safe, but we're going to avoid this area because of this, but we'll go here, follow the advice of the people on the ground. Don't force them to take an area just because you want to go see some birds. It's not worth risking it just for a few birds if the people on the ground are suggesting not to do it.
As always, the Birding Life is proud to be associated with Swarovski Optic, one of the world's leading producers of binoculars, monoculars, and spotting scopes, as well as the BirdLasser bird logging app. Spot, plot, play a part. Download and install the app to play your part in social conservation. One of the ways that you can help us to keep putting out the content that we are releasing is by supporting our online shop. We sell optics, books, Westermann's products, and a whole lot more. Check out the shop on our website, www.thebirdinglife.com. If you need any help with any of the products, please don't hesitate to email us on info@thebirdinglife.com. So when I've done research into different countries in Africa, there are obviously countries that are a little bit more open for tourists. You know, we've obviously spoken about Uganda earlier, probably had tourists for many, many years in the country. But we obviously also got to be aware of the cultural dynamics that take place. I mean, a lot of these people are very traditional. Some are very conservative. And, you know, some things that are acceptable in a Western culture might not be as acceptable in their culture. How important is it when going up into Africa to take note of the culture and in terms of preparing yourself not to be sensitive to the culture that is in the country?
Yes, definitely. It's a brilliant point you make, Adam. I think that sort of thing is going to vary. The continent's so big and the cultures vary so much within the continent. I think one needs to, once you decide on the destination you're interested, look again on websites. You know, all the travel websites, you know, you've got the Lonely Planets and the big ones, but there's so much out there. And just do a little bit of reading up on the cultures because it's just so interesting, but then what to expect. And often these travel advisories, these travel websites will give you advice on what to expect, dress codes in certain areas. If you're going to religious areas, this is expected. What countries might be supportive of certain things and not so supportive of others. And that obviously is also going to impact your decision on whether you're going to go or not. I think once you're in country and if you're on a guided tour, it's extremely important just to chat to your local guides about any concerns you might have or anything you want to know and say to them. They're the guys on the ground that can best advise, give you advice, and will also be saying, guys, we can't be doing this or we can be doing this there. And then when you're in country, I mean, and it links back to the safety of a country, you know, we can travel anywhere in the world, Adam. We can go to London. We can go to New York, Tokyo, Johannesburg, Kampala. Keep your wits about you. You're not gonna back home in Johannesburg, Cape Town, leave your camera on the bonnet or your laptop on the seat. So don't do it when you're traveling. You know, lock valuable stuff away. Just, you know, be aware. Don't just, you're on holiday. You know, one has to be aware everywhere we go now. And I think that makes a huge help. And be aware and respectful of the local people and the local customs. Most people are only too happy to see a tourist visiting the country, happy to chat to you, but just have that common respect, common decency we have with with just another human being. And then if you notice that, okay, one can clearly see when you enter an area, for example, in Africa, and it might be a very Muslim area that, you know, people might be going to church, so you're not going to be making a lot of noise. People might be, if you're going to a religious area and all covered up, then you just cover up if you're going to be going into that area. I think, you know, one just look around, you see what people are doing and try to fit in, not to stand out. That's probably the best piece of advice I can give.
Yeah, it's also probably not the right time if you've got certain things you want to push, maybe as a tourist, just keep those to yourself for time. You might not end up getting out the country. So it's probably just a better idea just to keep it about birding. But let's talk about something that as I've been planning for this trip has been the most stressful part. We'll talk about vaccinations and all that going in after this year. But in terms of you've planned for the birding, we'll talk about preparation of birding in a moment. Also now, in terms of packing for a trip, I mean, when I think of a birding trip, I've done trips to the UK before where I wasn't a birder and you're packing your clothes and all that kind of thing, which is fun. But now you're packing clothes, you binoculars, possibly a scope for some places, camera equipment, maybe a laptop, memory cards, a whole lot of different things. What are some tips that you can give to birders who are going up in terms of packing? Because I think there are two dangers. The one idea is to assume that you can just get certain things on the ground, which might not be as readily available. Like, for example, one of the African countries I was looking at, they recommended, for example, that if you want mosquito spray to spray on your, or insect repellent on your, for your body, that take it in because they say that you can't buy it in the country. So there's the one extreme, obviously, is to think, well, I don't need to pack that much because I can buy stuff on the ground, which might not be available. And then the second extreme is probably the extreme I'd go towards, is packing too much, where you just get there and you just have tons of stuff that you're not going to need. And then you want to kind of maybe buy a couple of gifts for people back home and there's no space. So what are some tips and advice that you get from your many trips into Africa in terms of how to pack intelligently for a trip into Africa?
For sure. And it's always a challenge depending on the trip you're doing. Definitely my best advice is to take only what you need, but you need to work out what you need. So what helps you there is have a look at the country you're going, get online a week before your trip, before you day, 2 days of your trip, and look what the local weather is doing. Have a look at the different areas you're going to. So if you're doing a trip to Kenya like I'm doing now, I know I'm only going to southern Kenya. I'm basically going to be in the savannah. I'm going to be in the open air. It's going to be hot. I know there's no need for me to take extreme cold weather gear. I'm not going up into the mountains in Mount Kenya, and I'm not going up in altitude. So it's not going to, I don't need to take thermals and thick socks and big jackets and all that. So that helps you in your packing. If you know, have a look at the weather where you're going. Obviously, you know, it can, in Africa, there's a good chance it might rain somewhere. So you have to take gear that can, well, stuff to, raincoats and stuff to protect your gear. But if you're only going to be going into the savannah parks, you don't need to take a jacket that you use if you're going to Patagonia, for example. And then what I would suggest, you know, most companies do give some form of packing list or an idea. So you can have a look at that and then see from there. Definitely one needs to pack in, and you have to take anything that you need that you know you can't easily get in a country. So it might be medical supplies or medical stuff you have to take that obviously you need to take with you. And I always pack just a personal basic first aid kit that's just got a couple of plasters if you've got blisters, and a headache tablet and heartburn, a couple of Imodiums, just these kind of things that, you know, if it happens to you, at least you've got something to take, you know, something if you've got a sore throat, a bit of cough mixture, that sort of stuff. Because, you know, to get that can be quite easy, and just to have a little stock of your own in your bag really can help you if it hits you when you're in the middle, when the middle of nowhere. Most places in Africa, you know, when you get to the big towns, you can get just about anything, but it's just better to take your own stuff for if you're far away from the nearest town, etc. I think also one needs to pack smart and comfortable in the sense that, you know, the clothing that we use when we go birding, the stuff that dries quickly and that moisture-wicking material, that's the best stuff to pack for an African trip, because most of Africa is very hot, it's humid, we sweat a lot. That stuff dries quickly. You can quickly wash it out in the evening, hang it up, and it's dry the next morning. And that limits you having to take 10 shirts, for example, or 5 pairs of pants, because you can, I call it the shower stomp. You can actually just wash it in the shower while you're showering, step on it, wring it out, hang it up, and it's dry. So that sort of stuff can just make your life easier. And it also keeps you cool when you're birding. We'll talk about vaccinations, but I mean, obviously malaria is something we definitely have to take into consideration. Most of Africa is a malaria area, so one has to take, I definitely suggest taking the malaria prophylactics against malaria. Mosquito sprays help. It also, you know, spray your legs for ticks if you can be walking on the grass. Some people prefer to wear long pants or short pants. I think that depends on you personally, but also where you're going to be walking. If you know you're really going deep in the forest, you're worried about things scratching you, you know, ants in the forest of Uganda and West Africa biting you, then long pants is definitely the way you want to go. Camera equipment, you need to take what's most suitable for what you're doing. So you want to take your camera equipment so you can get a good photo, but you know, a big fixed 700mm lens might be difficult to cart around in a forest, which is going to be easier if you're on a boat-based trip or sitting in an open vehicle. So I think that also helps you thinking of your packing, but also take what you're comfortable with. Don't take something that you're going to use if you haven't practiced with it and used it before, because you might just get frustrated. It's not working how you want it. You have to do, you haven't practiced with it, and then it just becomes this bulky thing that gets in the way. Scopes are advisable if you're going to be doing that kind of birding that needs a scope. So you're from the tour and you've got a scope, you're going to be spending time on wetlands and scanning for shorebirds and that sort of thing, then definitely taking a scope is advisable. But check whether your guys on the ground, often the ground operators will have a scope with them, so then it might not be necessary for you to haul your scope around. And they are quite big and bulky with a tripod, but sometimes I find it is one of those things to haul around, and you're happy you've hauled it around when you need it. The same with the camera gear. But my best advice is to pack for yourself where you're comfortable and only take what you can carry and what you can handle. There's no point taking bags and bags and bags and then you cannot carry or handle the stuff. And check what's provided. I mean, you don't need to, if you're doing lodge-based trips, you don't need to take towels, sleeping bags, blankets. These things are all there, which obviously makes the packing a little bit easier. You don't have to take these big bulky things. You'll be coming to Africa where generally it's hot. So, you need hats to protect yourself from the sun, suntan lotion, these sort of things, I think, are crucial. They're definitely not the things you want to take out.
And then in terms of when you're on the plane, I mean, so for example, this would maybe be two different dimensions, but so I would, traveling to an African country, most times I would probably fly from Durban to Johannesburg, and from Johannesburg I would take an international flight. So one of the challenges obviously is, in terms of packing camera equipment, is that the amount of kilograms you can take on a local flight is a lot less. So you might actually end up having to pay a little bit extra to take a bit of extra baggage on. But in terms of on the flight, how would you normally, what would you allow them to put into the cargo place, and what would you rather keep as handheld luggage? How would that look for you?
Yeah, sure. What the first thing is, I mean, obviously part of your planning is knowing what your weight restrictions are going to be on the trip. So like my trip now is I'm doing a bit of internal flights, and it's a fly-in safari. So I can only take 15 kilograms of luggage because we're in the small little Cessna hop-in flights. So that's my restriction. I have to work with that. And then I can take one bag of camera gear. So the camera gear definitely you take with you as hand luggage onto the plane. You cannot check that stuff into the hold. It's just not safe. You need to look after that stuff. You need to have a decent camera bag that fits your camera and your lenses in, that they packed nice and tight, snug for that flight. It's zipped up, and that basically goes in the hold above you where you can keep an eye on it. Your electronic devices, if you've got a laptop or a tablet, your memory cards, all that jazz needs to be in that bag and with you when you walk onto a plane as hand luggage, where your clothes, scope, sometimes, it just gets too much. So I have checked my scope in before. But, camera gear has to be with you in the hold. And just check with the local airlines what can be in your hold and your carry-on luggage and what can't be. I mean, like now, with us in the load shedding in South Africa, we've all got these power banks. Some of the guys, the power banks have to come with you in the plane, cannot go in your stowaway luggage. So it's very important to check that. Check what your weight restrictions are for your different flights and make sure you're in those limits. Because if you're over those limits, you're either going to pay a lot of money or you're going to slow yourself down. You can start missing flights. It can just really make your life difficult. Only really follow those limits, those restrictions as best you can. And if you have to, then you need to make the right choices. If you just listen, I'm not going to be that cold where I'm going. I've looked at the weather. Okay, I can take that one jersey out. I'm only going to go with one jacket and one raincoat. But make that decision. Don't take a jersey out and but 3 days of the tour, I'm going to be at high altitude and windy, because it is going to get cold. You're going to need that. But it's a valid point. You need to check those weight restrictions. And you learn to pack light in certain things also, certain types of clothing. Like I said, that light gear is so comfortable in Africa. And it's so much more lighter than trying to haul a pair of jeans around. For example, shoes, I wear my big pair of walking shoes when I get on the plane because I'm going to kick them off when I get onto the plane. And they're bulky and they take up weight. And then my sandals and maybe a pair of running shoes go into the hold. What I also suggest, when I go on trips, I'm taking all my stuff. I'm having to take stuff for clients that I'm giving them. And because I'm a runner, I take a pair of running shoes and a change of clothes to run in, and yet I can still fit it in. But what I've done is every trip, when I've packed a bag, when I come back from a trip, I have a list and I make a note of every single thing that I didn't use. And I've really managed to bring down my list quite substantially by going through that process as well.
Yeah, and then Trevor actually made quite a good point. We had him on our podcast, on our webinar last week, and he spoke about when he does international trips. He said when he got to Egypt airport, he had a problem. They didn't want to let him because he had binoculars in his handheld luggage. And being aware of those on the ground regulations that might become quite tricky when you arrive at a country. But you spoke about vaccinations. Let's talk about vaccinations up in terms of Africa. I learned something very interesting. I never knew. I actually never knew there was such a thing as a travel doctor. So Durban, there's a travel doctor. I'm sure they'll be all around the country. So there are travel doctors that can advise you in terms of vaccinations and medications. So talk about preparing yourself in that kind of way for trips.
Definitely. Just to touch on what you mentioned, the issue Trevor had. Yeah, in certain countries, you can normally read online if you just, Google binoculars, birding travel to that country, or if you even translate it through and you can't get a bit of advice. But what I suggest is often the guys just don't know. Just, if you get pulled aside, we all get a fright. They want to look at your bag, ask you what it is. Just stay nice and calm, friendly. Don't have a bad attitude, even though, it's been a long day of travel. Nice and cool, calm, collected. That person's just doing their job. And often then you get a chance to explain. They'll let you look. And most of the time they realize, it's just a pair of binoculars. They don't actually take photos and they just wanted to actually check it out and make sure. My best advice is any travel when you're dealing with, passport officials, whatever, calm, respect them, hat off to them. They're doing their job. Yes, sir. No, sir. Just respect them. If you go there with a bad attitude, throwing things around, those guys, they can make your life really, really, really difficult. Vaccinations, you need to check. So each country, if you just go into the country, if you're going to Rwanda, Uganda, you name it, South Africa, you can normally check up on the travel advisory for the area and what vaccinations are mandatory, and then just make sure you got them. For South Africans, travel within the most of Africa, we have to have a yellow fever vaccine. If you've had it before, just have your card. It's now valid for life. You don't need to redo it every 10 years. But if you don't have it, then just go get at the travel clinic, the travel doctor, get your yellow fever vaccine and speak to your travel clinics and doctors. They can advise on what you need for certain areas. And it's nice to do it in country because they generally have a good idea. But hear what they have to say, but also just check on a few online resources just to make sure you've got your ducks in a row. Most of my travel in South, East, Central and West Africa, the only thing they've ever asked me is for the yellow fever vaccine. And then obviously during the time of COVID, your COVID vaccination. People often talk about rabies. It's something to be careful of when you're in Africa. Obviously, don't just touch any dog and have any contact with any mammal because any mammal can carry rabies. And I just tell guests, just don't play with the dogs unless you really know that, okay, these dogs are from, in Africa we see stray dogs. Don't go and pat the dogs, want to play with the dogs, because if they bite you and they've got rabies, you've got a problem.
Yeah, so let's start looking at the birding side. You mentioned earlier that you are planning to go up to Angola. So let's talk about the preparation process. How do we prepare to go on a trip? Because here's the thing. There's not just the visual side. There's also the audio side. There's a whole lot of different things to prepare. And, I'm looking at doing a trip up into an African country. There's 650-odd species. Some of them are obviously found in South Africa, but a lot of them are not found in South Africa. And I can be very honest, as you start that preparation process, it can be very, very overwhelming. So how do you go around that process when you're going into a country that you haven't been into before?
Definitely try and get as much resources as you can, Adam, and the listeners. So try and get the local field guide for the area, the country, or the region. Download the Merlin app, which is linked to the Birds of the World, which is a free resource for us as South Africans. Get the bird pack loaded for where you're going. So then you've got a field guide, you've got an app on your phone. The apps on the phone all have great pictures and recordings. Spend time using the Birds of the World, and even the eBird website has got amazing stuff that one can use. It's got pictures of birds, sound recordings, even videos of these birds. And then, just break your trip out up into segments. So get familiar with the birds in the bird book. Get familiar with the families, especially if it's going to be new families for you. And just start getting familiar with them in the bird book, and then use the online resources. Read trip reports. Most companies will publish trip reports on the country you're going to. So by reading the trip report, you can quite easily on the trip report see, okay, on day four, we're in this part of the forest. Most trip reports, the guys see this. These are the targets. You can read online. On your own itinerary that you'll get, you'll know what the targets are for the forest. Then I break the trip up into the sections and learn the birds per the section. It just makes it very easy to manage. So you know, okay, this morning I'm going to be going to Padongo Forest, or this morning I'm going to be going to, you name it, the Masai Mara. You know, okay, these are the key birds that I want to see in the reserve. These are the endemics. Here's the specials. These are the ones I want to see. So spend time getting to know them, and use the resources, you know, the recording tools that are available to us, where people have recorded the sounds of the birds, can really help one also get familiar with the calls. And the most important thing is to have fun doing the research and the work. You know, a good part of going to a new country is the work that's done beforehand, and it can be really, really fun and engaging, because you really get to learn a lot about these birds in these countries, the country, the people, the areas. For me, you know, once you start, it just becomes one thing onto the next, and you just start to learn so much about where you're going that it's actually fun and it's really enjoyable. And I don't think it should feel like a task. It should be something that you really, really enjoy. But to sum it up, there's so much resources online you have to get a good field guide, but then, you know, the Merlins, eBird, the Birds of the World, even YouTube videos of people themselves have made into the area. Some companies, myself, I've done it on YouTube. We actually have virtual birding tours of countries we've been to. So you can watch these and get familiar with what we've seen, how the routes, that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of resources out there that one can use.
Yeah, and then obviously, and it's not just the pre-bird planning. I love what you're saying about breaking the trip into locations. And I know eBird is fantastic for that. You can get lists from different localities, see when the bird was last seen. There just was actually, as we were talking about that, just Googling, and the first one that came up was actually Nature Travel Birding with trip report on a certain location I'm looking to go into. So it's fantastic. But something also that would add value is also throughout the trip, you know, maybe, you know, at night, just preparing yourself for the next day. So, you know, for example, I've gone here, I've seen these birds here. Tomorrow morning, we're going to this place here. This is possible species. Go through the app. Go, you know, kind of remind yourself, play the calls again. How important is that? Obviously, we've done the pre-trip preparation, but in terms of the preparation that you can do on the trip.
Definitely. What I do, I mean, you make notes, you travel with notes. You know, eBird is such a nice resource. You can even pull up on eBird your needs list for the country, and you can go, okay, needs list for Angola. This is what I need for my world list, and we'll spit out what birds will be new for you for your world list in Angola and the percentage of seeing them. Print out that list. Have that list with you in the field. So you can sit there in the vehicle and be like, okay, geez, I'm still looking for a yellow-throated spurfowl. We should have seen this bird, or what's the chances? And then the guides can interact with you and say, oh, really, you need that bird. I know a good spot on the way here. We can try and look for this bird. And then by having those lists with you, and if you've broken up your list into areas and you've done your pre-work at home, knowing that, okay, today I'm going into Simliki, these are the special birds I'm looking for. On the way to the reserve, on the long drives, you know, you can go through, see how the birds look, read a little bit about them, ask the guide if you have any questions, and you can listen to the calls even in the car, because then you know they're pretty fresh in your head, especially if you hear the guide saying regularly, this is the bird we're looking for, this is the bird we're looking for. You should with time be able to recognize that bird call after you've heard it being played or you've heard it a few times. But that's where you're also doing your research of just trying to understand how the different families and the birds behave. So, I mean, if you've done your research before and you know, okay, when we're in the forest, we're looking for green bulls. Oh, quick moving birds. This green bull might have this feeding pattern. The yellow streak green bull we have in South Africa does that wing flick. This one might act like a woodpecker. That just makes it so much easier. So if the guide, or if you're with, or if you think, okay, I want a green bull, and you know that, it becomes much more easier to identify, of course, along with a call. Also, understanding the bird's behavior and how they move can be so helpful in actually seeing them. If you're looking for a shy, skulking bird, like an Elodopsis in East Africa, or you name it, one of the chatterers, or one of these shy birds, you know, okay, I'm looking low down on the ground in the leaf matter. I need to be keeping dead still and just watching for a little bit of movement. Binoculars need to be up, you know. Some of these shy birds, I mean, I remember when spending some time now in Argentina, and some of those leaf matter specialists, you know, too much movement on an ant pit and the bird's gone. So you're literally sitting with those binoculars just below your nose. The bird is there. All you have to do is lift those binoculars up and you've got the bird. Interact with the people that are with you, the experts. If you've got a local guides, and obviously in a nice way, but be asking them, I've heard this, what's this? I think it's this, because they then realize you've got that sort of interest and you're going to get more out of your tour from them. If I'm guiding a trip and I've got a client with me and he's asking me questions about the bird call he's hearing, I know he's got an ear for bird calls, so I can start pointing out what things I'm hearing, which we can imagine makes it very beneficial for him. If I see the guy as a photographer, then I, you know, can try and position the vehicle. If I'm vehicle based or the boat based, that he can get really good photos of the bird. So I think when you interact with the people that are on the tour with you, it makes it more easy for them to understand what you're trying to get out of the trip as well.
And then probably the last question I'll ask is this, and you touched on local guides there. What is the how important is it to use local guides, and how can you find these local guides in a way that's safe? Because obviously we've spoken about booking a tour with a company like Nature Travel Birding or one of the tour companies, but there might be birders that want to do it themselves and they want to book guides on ground level. How important is it to utilize those local guides, and what suggestions would you give to people that would like to rent local guides in a way that they're not going to get swindled?
Definitely. I think, Adam, local guides are so important for the first reason. I mean, if we think how important it is for AV tourism, for us in a way to give back, you know, so if you've got local guides and local guides are being employed to show people birds, it shows the community in the area and the people in the area how important the birds are, but they are benefiting from the birds. And if they're benefiting from having those birds there, those birds are going to be protected and they're going to be better looked after, which I think that's also part of what we want to achieve. And it's partly us as birders, what we should be looking to do, of course, where we can. I'm going to punt BirdLife South Africa and Andrew de Blok a little bit and the great work they've done with the bird routes in South Africa and the bird guides that we have in our country. Just some of the likes, you know, David Lutwalo, Mkhuba Struff, Sakamuzi down in Tanzini, Temba, Samson up in Northern Kruger or the Soutmanspurg. These guys are excellent in the area. And if you're looking for those hard-to-see certain birds, hiring them, having you join you, you're getting good bang for your buck. You've gone all that way. You don't want to miss those birds. It's definitely worth getting these guys to help you, and you can get onto the birds. So you can imagine in some areas, like in South Africa, where we've got a good network, you can book these guys. They're trustworthy. They've got good write-ups. You can book them, get their details through BirdLife or through like in Vakkerstrom, the Centen Vakkerstrom, or have a look online. You know, most things online, you can read online reviews, speak to other birders, ask questions on the forums. I mean, the Birding Life forum you guys run on Facebook is a wealth of knowledge. And you write on there, hey, guys, I'm going birding in Morocco. Anyone know of any bird guides around? You might get some feedback. You can look online and then definitely get in contact. And, I mean, use a bit of savvy. See if you're really not sure. I mean, it sometimes can be quite daunting paying someone before knowing them. See, you know, if you can pay a deposit and pay them the rest in the day, you know, you can always chat to the guys. But generally, if the guy's got a good reputation, he's known, you can look him up on Facebook. And you can see this guy's legit. This is what he's doing. It's the real deal. Some countries don't have local guides. I'm going to Mauritius later in the year, and trying to find a local guide from Mauritius just to try and see some of the island's endemics is really, really difficult. But I've managed to find a guy who I actually, an old client, referred to me, and I'm speaking to him now, asking him questions. Suss it out, you know, and you can see, well, where is this going? Where is this not? But, you know, sometimes you just have to take a chance. Book him. Tell him if you can, you'll pay him on the day. And if he doesn't pitch up, well, at least you don't lose much. But, yeah, I mean, most of these bird guides, you can find out enough about them and you can see they are legit. And there's a lot of information out on the different forums, things like even Fat Birder. They've got a lot of stuff internationally where they suggest bird guides and you can find quite a lot of information.
Yeah, but just like you said now, really just I think it just shows us how blessed we are in South Africa to have an organization like BirdLife South Africa. The fact that they've got these local guides that you can book them and you know that they are legit. So, yeah, big heads up to Andrew and the team at BirdLife South Africa. Mark, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know we had some challenges around getting this episode out, but thank you for your time and all the best for your trip. Looking forward to getting you back on when you get back and we can talk about what you managed to see. But hopefully this episode has been helpful. It's been a little bit different, a little bit less bird-centered. But I do believe for people that are planning to do trips, there's a wealth of information in this episode. So thank you so much for being so willing to share your knowledge. And yeah, we really appreciate not just you in terms of a guide, but I know that you're someone who's made, you've had a huge impact in the birding community as a whole. So thank you, not just for your guiding, but just for the impact that you've had in the lives of many birders in South Africa. So thank you so much, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Adam. That's really kind words. I really appreciate that. It's always great chatting to yourself and your listeners. And you guys do a great crowd. I love what you're doing with your Facebook page and all that. So it's really, really awesome. So it's an honor and privilege to chat to the folks and just share what I've got. You know, I'm lucky. I had some good mentors that helped me. So it's all about giving back and returning the favor. So happiness. I'm looking forward to be coming back. When I'm back, I'm sure we can do an episode of Kenya and Uganda. Sounds like we're looking at that and we'll take it from there. But it's been great. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's show. We really appreciate your support. If you have any comments or feedback on any of the episodes, feel free to drop us an email on info@thebirdinglife.com or send us a message on any of our social media platforms. We would love to get to know you better. So, until next time, be blessed and happy birding.